back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we are the podcast where we talk about all things Avatar, The Last Airbender, Legend of Korra. We're in season 4 of Legend of Korra, talking about The Calling today, episode 4. It's for sure episode 4. Tony, how are you doing today?
A little tired, a little sleepy, but I'm here.
But we are here. Really quick, before we get started with the episode, why don't you let everybody know where they can follow us online?
So they can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The Arrow Pod.
Absolutely. And if any of you are listening on Apple Podcasts, we'd really appreciate it if you just, you know, left a review, gave us a rating. You know, you don't have to give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate those as they help out the show. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have a 5-star rating, leave a rating and just kind of let us know what you'd like to see improved. What you'd like to see in the inevitable recasting of my character on this podcast. Fun fact, my name's not actually Chandler. I'm just a paid actor. So,
It's trademark position, Chandler. So we just rotate Chandlers in.
Yeah. There's like a vocal audition, as well as in forgets to mention really important parts of the episode audition. So we're open. We have auditions open. You know, just send in your audition tapes as Chandler, and we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it takes you. Awesome. So yeah, we're talking about The Calling this week. Episode starts off, we're on Air Temple Island. It's really funny, Tony. We're like only like a minute and a half in right now, mm-hmm. maybe 2 minutes in. We just had audio issues up to 4 minutes in, so I didn't feel like just doing everything that we just did. So I'm just going straight into the episode. We're on Air Temple Island. The Airbender kids are about to go off on their journey to find Korra. Pema's a little bit worried about them being so young, going off on their own, saying, Tenzin, you should go with them. And Tenzin has to kind of stay back to do diplomatic efforts with Kuvira as asked for by President Raiko.
Mm-hmm. So it's daunting to kind of send your kids out to the world and just like, hey, go adventure and find Korra, which no one else has been able to do. But Iki kind of mentions like, hey, like we are roughly the same age as Uncle Aang when he went off into the world and kind of went adventured and traveled. And that's such a like crazy thing to me that to think like they seem so young. Yeah. But Jinora would be the same age as Korra, right? I mean, Katara, right?
As like Katara or Zuko or something like that.
Like close to Katara's age, and then Iki would probably be Aang's age.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, I don't know. It's hard to transition like that thought over that, like, yeah, they're roughly the same age, even though they seem super young. But I'm like, no, they. Like Aang was super young.
Yeah. I'm actually looking. She was 14 in book 4. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
She would have definitely been Katara's age at that time. Which means Iki would have been Aang's age because I think she's a couple years younger.
Yeah,
something like that. So yeah, it's really really interesting. I don't know. I've always really enjoyed these scenes with Milo in them. Milo's kind of like, we're going to live off the land. We don't need your food, Mom. And then she's like, but I made your favorite ones with the happy faces on them. And then he's like, and then he like opens it up. He's like, oh, I can't eat this one. It's smudged. Just kind of like showing like, yeah, he's probably not really well equipped to go off on this journey on his own. Good thing he has his older sisters with him.
I didn't like Milo this episode.
No?
To be honest.
No?
Why? I don't know. After a while, he got more and more annoying to me.
It all started here. Yeah, I don't know. I've enjoyed Milo's presence. I just think he adds like a good of... I think that Milo is... you know, the kind of like the polar opposite of Jinora, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we see Iki is kind of like in the middle of the two of them, right? Like she can be kind of boisterous and loudmouthed and annoying. And she also can be really responsible and smart and resourceful. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, you know, Jinora is kind of on one end of that spectrum and she's like this really like kind of reserved, really smart kind of person, and Milo's kind of this just like impulsive kind of, you know, just do whatever you want to kind of person. I kind of like the three of them. I think that they really work well together in this episode. I guess I can understand if someone can find Milo really annoying in this episode. But I don't know, man.
There's like a rascal type of like charm to him before, like when he was way younger. Like it was just like some like oh Milo type of moments, and then throughout this episode I'm just like, "Hey, shut up." Like when they're about to take off and it's just like he's like no one no like he's kind of just defying everyone, and it's like saying like, oh, no one can tell me what to do, like no man can tell me, especially no girl. I'm like, shut up, man. Go away.
I can see that for sure. I think that there's one Milo moment in this episode that I really enjoy, but as Jenora and as they get to their first stop on the mission, as they leave, kind of Tenzin and Jenora talk about how Jenora has not been able to sense Korra yet, but she's gonna hone in on her spiritual energy on the on the journey. They stop in this place where Jenora begins to meditate. Immediately, Iki is the annoying one. Iki kind of just stopped, like she just kind of walks in and just every 2 seconds is like, hey, have you found Korra yet? Like, what's going on? And it's like, wait, aren't you like even if you're like 12 years old, like you are like the daughter of Tenzin and the sister of Jenora. Like you should understand like how meditation works. And you're just like ruining it. You know, I don't know. That I was like more annoyed by that than I was Milo most of this episode, in my opinion.
I mean, she was like super impatient. She was expecting her to kind of just be able to like to instantly have a like some sort of results or direction or something. I don't know. I think maybe she's just like, when's the last time I saw her like do something like this? And I think that was when they were in the cave when they were being captured by the Red Lotus, and she kind of like just meditated and she spirit projected what seems fairly quickly from our perspective at least, and then she was able to like look around the cave and come back. So I think she was kind of just like, okay, go just do that, like do it, do your thing. You're a master now, right? You have your arrows.
I mean, it makes sense. I'd also say that like I'd be willing to bet that Jenora wasn't projecting, right? Like, I'd be willing to bet that Jenora was more...
I know, I'm just saying, like that's the like the realm of powers that she thinks she's using now. So it's just like, oh, like, you know, go do that.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. But, I mean, the early kind of part of this episode is just Jenora trying to meditate, Iki and Milo stopping Jenora from meditating. Iki and Milo decide to go into town with this picture that Milo drew of Korra, and Milo's freaking like,
good.
Like what? Van Gogh or whoever? I don't know who draws good, but like, Milo is actually the animator of this entire show. I was like, he didn't draw that, but there's nothing, like, there was never any kind of thing that's like, he didn't draw it. Like, they're just like, oh yeah, Milo just drew this picture. He's got this like hidden talent that he just completely just disregards.
So they take the picture around around the city, asking multiple people to see if anyone has seen her or have heard from her, but they have no luck. I mean, they even talked to someone, an older dude that was drinking, and then he's like, the avatar,
we still have one of those.
And it's like, it's been such a long time, it's been years, that it seems like people are really just like forgetting that the avatar was a thing. It's just like, oh yeah, like that's still supposed to be a thing. Like, we're supposed to still have one. I thought he kind of just like stopped.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, like interestingly enough, it's kind of like this like mini effect, kind of like the 100-year war, right? Where at the end of the 100 years, when Aang came back, most people in the world were just like, yeah, the avatar is just kind of like a distant legend. It's kind of a fairy tale, right? And people are starting to kind of feel that way. here. Mm-hmm. They know that Korra is a real person. They know that she exists. They're just like, ah, she's just not doing anything anymore. Like, what's, you know? So that's kind of like an interesting little tidbit there. But as they go through their different towns and cities, Milo comes up and like meets this girl whose name is Tuyin. Yeah. And he's like, I'm on a top secret mission. It's really dangerous. I'm trying to find the Avatar. And this girl's just indulging him. You know, she's just like indulging him and just like blowing up his ego. And eventually Iki's like, Milo, come on, we've got to go. And then she's like, oh, it looks like you got to get back to your mission. Here, take this, Milo. I hope you stay safe. And then she walks away and you see Milo make the Aang, I'm in love face kind of thing. Yeah. You know, and then he's like, you drove away the love of my life. Like, I don't know. I thought that was just like so funny. Like, I just really liked that part.
I didn't even write it in my notes because I didn't even care for it. I don't like Milo.
Apparently. Yeah, apparently you just don't like Milo. Yeah.
Before I did. I really enjoyed his little scenes and fart jokes.
It's like now that he's not a 5-year-old, now that he's a 9-year-old, he should be able to just get over it.
No, just get over it. Be an adult. How dare you?
I'm sorry, a 9-year-old kid is a juvenile. is he even 9? He might be 8. I think he's 9.
Yeah, he might be younger.
I think he's 9. But he's 8 or 9, but either way.
So yeah, the kids end up finding the fisherman. So finding the fisherman that took the picture of Korra. Mm. So Milo's able to find the wall of avatars and see that he has a picture of Korra. And it's like, yes, we finally have a lead. But he mentions, like, I haven't seen her since in 6 months. And she was like pretty rough shape and I don't know where she was going. So it's pretty dead end for that. And then Milo kind of blows up on Iki. He's like, hey, you need to start doing more. It's like, I didn't do anything. Exactly.
Pull your own
it's
weight.
Like, and you too. Yeah. You too. So-called leader. And it's just like, what the heck?
Yeah.
That was so uncalled for.
Absolutely. It was uncalled for. And then, there's that moment between Iki and Jinora where Iki's like, don't you remember when he used to be so nice and sweet? And Jinora just with like the grouchiest face on is just like, no.
No,
I don't. So this is the moment where we kind of come to, this is kind of where the conflict begins with the, like their actual trials kind of begin in the episode where Milo throws the food down the river because he wants to hunt for food and he wants to like live off the land. And Iki's like,
and they're vegetarians.
Don't hunt. What are you talking about? and Jinora's just like, can you guys be quiet? And I'm like, wait, that's where I was a little bit upset with Jinora at this point. I was like, wait, Jinora, you're not gonna say anything about knowledge. Like the fact that like Iki's right, you know, like like she's right to freak out right now because literally all of their food is gone because Milo threw it down the river, and you're just not gonna say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently not. I mean, in her mind is just like, let me do this so that we can just go home.
Yeah.
Like, let me do what I'm trying to do. Let me meditate. Let me try to hone in on her spiritual energy so that we can just go home. But it seems like at every corner, they're kind of just, like, messing with her. And I think that definitely takes a hit to your ego and, your abilities to do stuff. Because it's like, oh, like, the reason we're sent on this mission is because Jinora has this strong spiritual connection, and she's able to also connect with other people's spiritual energy. So it kind of definitely takes a hit to your ego because of your abilities, and if like you're able to even do it, it doesn't seem to be working. And it might be in her mind like, can I even do this? Like, is this even working?
Yeah.
So it's that frustration that like, hey, like you guys are constantly like at every corner not allowing me to even meditate for a second. Like, just give me this time to do it.
Yeah. I think that this episode, I mean, soon after, right, Iki kind of goes off on her own. She makes a friend with a squirrel and gets cat.
A sugar glider.
A sugar glider.
Yeah. Those are cute,
man. Is that like a real animal?
Yeah, it's a sugar glider.
I've never heard of a sugar glider.
Yeah, it's like they didn't even like combine two animals. That's just a sugar glider.
Sugar glider animal. Okay. Oh, hey, it is a real animal.
Yeah.
I don't like its eyes.
So I don't think they combined it with anything else. Like, it literally just looks like how a sugar glider looks.
Apparently the sugar glider is actually three different species of animals. Yeah. Really? According to this Google at.
So it's already just a hybrid.
Viz.org. So she makes friends with a sugar glider after like scaring it. But then immediately gets captured by two of Kuvira's mm-hmm. soldiers, who yes. take her back and tie her up. This was my second favorite part of this episode, actually. these two, they're soldiers, but they're really just like goons, really, right? Like they're like the low level grunts kind of.
Yeah, they're the only people left behind.
Yeah.
The only people left behind here. I mean, the soldiers find out that who Iki is, and they kind of have like a little side conversation. It's like, hey, like I think if we you know turn it's Tenzin's kids. If we can gather them all up and turn them over to Kuvira, we'll finally get promotions. And it's like, well, you mean you will be able to get out of here? It's like, yeah. So they try to figure out like where Milo and Jinora are, mm-hmm. but Iki's like, I don't want to hang out with them. Like, I want to hang out with you
guys.
Yeah.
and she, like, she swiftly, like, makes friends with them to the point where, like, she's giving them pep talks. Like, they're giving her pep talks, you know. And then mm-hmm. they're showing her, like, yeah, this is where all of our soldiers are. If she was anywhere in the Earth Kingdom, we would have seen her. And she's like, what about the swamp area right here? And he's like, yeah, nobody goes there. So maybe she's there. Like, cool. Mm-hmm. And as Iki is like, you know, eating macaroons with these people and like making friends with them, Jinora and Milo just like smash in and knock them out, like airbend the doors open and like hit them with the doors and just knock them out and everything like that. And Iki's like, also, I think it's like safe to note that Iki is like tied up very, very poorly. Like she like walked out like after Jinora and Milo came. She just got out of the ropes herself. A. B. When she's sitting there with them and she's pointing at the map, she literally pulls her arms out of the ropes. She
takes her arms
right?
out.
Like,
oh yeah, that I think that was just a callback to like Avatar: Last mm-hmm. Airbender. That's exactly how on Avatar Day when Aang is like in the, what is it called?
I don't know, but he's in the.
There's the, yeah, it's like the wooden thing where your head goes in, your arms go in. I forget what it's called, a specific name for it, but he's like imprisoned with it. And then like, as he's kind of just like chatting up the other prisoners, he just like smoothly takes it off and rests his head on it. Like it's not holding him whatsoever. Yeah. So I think that was definitely just like a callback to that.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's just...
Yeah, Jinora kind of just like slips her arms out and starts like pointing at the map, like, and then puts her arms right back in.
Yeah, Iki is funny in this episode. I like it a lot.
But yeah,
they decide. Iki's like, I know where Korra is. We're gonna fly over this swamp. Please trust me. And they do, and you know, Jinora doesn't get any readings from Korra over the swamp, so she decides like we're gonna turn around. It's not working.
Yeah, what the heck was that? Like, literally, they're just, like, barely flying over, and it's just, like, she meditates for that 2 seconds that she's been meditating for.
So maybe she did only need 2 seconds.
And like, oh, yeah, apparently. But that's the thing, like, 2 seconds, like, nope, nothing here. I don't sense anything. There's a lot of spiritual energy in the swamp, but I don't sense Korra at all.
Yeah.
So Iki's like, okay, well, I mean, Milo's like, okay, let's get out of here. She's not mm-hmm. here. We're wasting our time.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Iki. It's like, what the heck? Like, you look how massive this thing is.
Yeah, it's like this giant landmass in the Earth Kingdom, right?
Yeah. And you're just like flying in for like a minute or two, and it's like, nah, not here.
Yeah.
So Iki's kind of trying to plead with them, like, hey, like, we literally just got here. Let's look around for a little bit. But the other two already just turn around and leave. And it's not until the spirit, I mean, the, Swamp literally like grabs onto them with mm-hmm. the vines and pulls them down, forcing them to go into the swamp.
Yeah. Which is where we should segue back to Korra and Toph.
Yes.
So this is immediately following when Korra had tried to have Toph bend the metal out of her, but was very, very resistant to it, involuntarily. Like, Korra's not consciously trying to keep the metal in, but every time the metal is trying to be pulled out, it's painful for her. It brings her back to the memories of her previous fights and her previous failures. Mm-hmm. So we see Korra and Toph just kind of sitting around, and Korra's like, yo, tell me about the time that you taught Aang how to earthbend. And Toph's like, yeah, I threw some rocks at him and Sokka fell in a hole. Big whoop.
And it's like, what? Okay, I thought there was going to be more to it. I guess, tell me the time you guys took down the Fire Lord. It's like, it was hot. I was on a blimp. I think there was a giant turtle that showed up.
Korra's like, you're terrible at telling stories. And Toph's like, you're terrible at listening to them. Like, what? At the same time, for Sozin's comment, I don't know if Toph has, like, the best point of view as to how that happened.
Yeah, actually, that's true.
She was. It was hot, and she was on a blimp. And then she must have heard about a turtle showing up. She obviously didn't see, but like couldn't have like been aware of actually what was happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Then we segue over to her sending her to go get mushrooms.
Yeah.
So she wanted psychedelic mushrooms to get high. God. So she sent, no, it was for food. So she's like, oh, go get us food. If you really want to go do something, make sure you get the big slimy ones. So Korra sets off to go on the path that she, told her that she could find these mushrooms. But as she's kind of making her way out there, she starts getting visions. And as we've seen in the past, the swamp does show you visions, as Aang, Katara, and Sokka had visions while they were in the swamp.
I'd call them flashbacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're kind of interchangeable.
Oh, yeah, these specifically,
In this show, I think they're probably interchangeable. In a real world sense, we would call them flashbacks, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just flashbacks back into the very important events in her life that were just also very traumatic. I mean, the first one was getting her bending taken away from Amon. The second one was like Rava being ripped out of her, and then the last one was being chained up and being poisoned by the Red Lotus. So at every time she turned away, there was a different flashback that she was experiencing again. She was like looking at herself suffer. Yeah. And then Toph ended up finding her kind of just like sitting down, like trying to process all this.
So Toph is like, yeah, I kind of expected this would happen. But you need to kind of like face your fears and stop fighting the fights that you've already fought, essentially, right?
Yeah, she mentions, she's like, the swamp knows that you're out of balance. Mm-hmm. It knows what you need, and so it's kind of showing you these flashbacks.
Yeah. And she starts saying stuff like, mentioning like, Amon wanted equality, Unalaq wanted to bring back the spirits, and Zaheer believed in freedom. All of those things, objectively are not bad things, but the way that they went about it, they were so far out of balance, they were so far onto one side of that fight, that they became, they became bad guys, right? They became villains because of the way in which they followed that ideology. And the same thing is kind of happening to you, except for you're being your own villain at this point, right? Like you're your own biggest bad guy at this moment, because you're not letting yourself finish these fights.
Yeah, she mentions like you can't expect to deal with future enemies if you're still fighting the old ones. And this whole process was for her to understand that like you can learn something from this. So these these huge traumatic events that she's gone through and she's had to endure, she's still holding on to it as most people do, because it's a huge traumatic event and something that shaped us. Like, life events in general, whether they be good or bad, shape us into who we are. So we normally have a tendency of carrying these. But in Cora's case, she's carrying them as a burden, as they tried to hurt me. They try to hurt other people, and they scarred me in a way, whether it be physically or emotionally. But Toph's trying to mention to her, it's like, okay, like, you're going to hold this regardless. You're going to hold these events, and they're going, and but the way you're doing it is weighing you down. So it's like, think about like what you can learn from this, what you can take away from it, rather than just how it affected you.
Yeah.
Which I think is such a beautiful way to deal with a lot of our issues in the real world.
Absolutely. The Cora is taken back to the Banyan Grove tree by Toph. And Toph talks about how this tree is, you know, the oldest tree in the swamp. It's connected to everything, not only in the swamp, but essentially in the entire world. Did she say that? I mean, that's basically the message that we've gotten.
No, she said it goes on for miles and miles, connecting the entire swamp. But in the last episode, she mentions, just like, I can see everything. Yeah. I can see Zhaofu. I can see Republic City.
Yeah, I mean, even like in the previous series, like there's kind of allusions to the idea that this tree is kind of one of the spiritual centers of the world, right? Like that. Mm-hmm. You can be more connected to the world by being at this swamp, by being at this tree. So I don't know if the roots go across the entire world, but there's like some sort of really central spiritual connection that this swamp has to the rest of the world.
Can you pause for a second?
At the very least. But Toph says something that I found was really, really important was when she talks about how the Banyan Grove tree connects the rest of the swamp, she says, you've been disconnected from the people who love you and from yourself for too long, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, that line was so important, because I mean that's like a trauma thing, right? Like, you spend so much time trying to like protect yourself that you neglect these other relationships, that you neglect asking yourself, what do you really need? Because you just assume. You just assume, like, if I can do everything I can to keep myself safe, if I stay inside, if I, you know, stock up on these things, if I never go to this kind of place or anything like that, I'll be safe. And then you never ask yourself, but what's actually going to make me happy, right? Like, there's a way to be happy and to be safe. And that happy question, that fulfilled question, those things never come up. And that's not been coming up for Cora either. She's like, what can I do to make myself feel safe? If I can prove to myself that I can take someone down in a fight, I'll feel safe. So let me go fight in this underground ring. Right? If I can, you know, if I can find Rava, like, I can feel safe. So let me travel all over the Earth Kingdom to find Rava. Right? Like, so, and so she's never asked herself, like, but what's going to make me happy? Even to the point where she puts her hand on the tree and she, you know, starts, you know, moving through the swamp and finds Janora, and Janora is able to kind of come to her.
Yeah, she was able to make that connection just like Aang did when he was at the tree.
And then as soon as Janora and Iki and Milo show up, like, you see the tears come down from Korra's eyes. Like, she's so incredibly happy in that moment. She hasn't seen anybody that she knows or loves in a long time. And she forgot how much she needed that. And it really, really had affected her in that way. It's also a really nice meeting for Toph. To meet Aang's grandkids, who I'm assuming she's never met before.
No, it doesn't seem like it. Because, I mean, Milo went up to her. It's like, oh, like, blind, old, cranky? You must be Toph. Yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like she's ever met them.
And then Toph's like, I like this one. they all end up going back to the cave in which Toph and Cora were staying, and it's Korra's like kind of final test. It's like, you're gonna have to bend the metal out of yourself. And Cora begins to do it, and as the first try, she like starts, you know, she grabs her chest and starts gasping for air.
Yeah.
And Toph just has to be there and say, like, that fight's over. Like, you're not there anymore. Let it go. Right? And so she tries again, and as she bends out this poison. She starts having like these visions of her old fights, but also is able to get the poison out. And it reminded me of, I don't know, Tony, if you know that much about like either prolonged exposure or like EMDR. Yeah. Yes. Like it reminded me of that, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think this entire, the entirety of the time where she was trying to get her poison out with Toph trying to do it and now her trying to do it, it's a sensation that is familiar to her because it, the first time she's ever felt any of this was when she was pretty much dying from that poison. So it's just like, okay, like this feeling, like you can have a anxiety attack or traumatic experience in a specific location, like you're feeling that again. So for her, just like just the sensation of the metal trying to be bent out is bringing her back to that mindset and of like, oh my god, like this last time I felt this, I was pretty much dying. I was like on my deathbed. So for her now, it's in a safer environment. You have someone guiding her through it because she's telling her like, hey, like it's going to be okay. You don't have to fight this fight anymore. You can let it go. And her trying to ease her way through it herself.
And it's at that moment that Cora is able to do it, that, you know, she gets all of the metal out and that she's able to go back into the Avatar state. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it like a really, really important distinction right now here that, like that this is not Cora being like healed or her being, fixed in any way. It's just Cora. Well, that's what she thinks, yeah. So. And that's what a lot of people might think after they get to this point in, like, trauma treatment in that sense. But really what that is that's you being able to finally tolerate the kinds of things that you've been avoiding, the kinds of things that you've been afraid of. You're able to face them. You're able to tolerate them. And there's still a whole lot more work that you're going to have to do past that point to continue on with, like, living your life in the way that you want to. But Cora just took, like, the first most important step, which is I'm not going to let these things rule over my life anymore, right? And being able to decide that and to, like, represent that by getting the poison out of her body herself was really, really profound. And we'll see, like, in future episodes. Like, for all of you who've watched, like, you know that this is not the end of that road for Cora. But it's really, like, that most important step. Cora would not have been able to do anything else that she does throughout the rest of this season without having taken this first step. And I got chills. I got chills watching this part too. Again. So, I want to give this episode a 9.
I want to give this episode.
Because you hated me an so 8. Much.
Honestly, like the parts that I enjoy of this is the top, like just the top stuff. And then this, like the very end. So it's just like, everything that happened in the swamp is what I enjoy. Everything before that, I didn't really care for. Yeah, so it's almost like half the episode I just didn't really enjoy, like the kids traveling and I don't know. I didn't really sync with it. And then everything that happened in the swamp and everything that Toph said specifically, like I was like, oh my god, preach, woman, heck yes, I enjoy this. I love this.
Literally like, Toph was saying everything that makes me love what I do for a job. You know what I mean? Like, so exactly. that easily like became a really good part of the episode. I don't know. I mean, the episode ends with Cora hugging Toph and the kids flying off on the bison, which is a staple of the show, obviously. But I don't know, Tony, do you have any other kind of closing thoughts about it? I know we're on a shorter episode today and I don't think that's really quite a problem, but I just wonder if you have any other closing thoughts about it.
No. No, not whatsoever. Like you mentioned, I think what Toph was mentioning and expressing to her is really important to keep in mind. I mean, for anybody, I think there's a huge takeaway. Like we mentioned before, a lot of people end up holding on to traumatic events, negative events in our lives, and we hold on to it in a negative fashion, of course, because it's a negative thing that happened, but ends up weighing us down. And we don't allow ourselves to process it further than I don't like that this happened to me. It made me feel bad, or it made me feel absolutely horrible. And that's as far as we process a lot of our these events. So what Toph mentioned is really important. Like, what can you learn from this? What can you take away from this that can make you a better person? Even if it's just like, hey, I don't like these things anymore, or I don't want to do these things anymore, or this career path that I feel like I spent my life doing for whatever reasons, like, and wasted so many years doing, like, now I stepped away from it. Like, I had, like, I have college students in the past, like want to stick with their major because they're like, oh, like, I don't have any, like, I've done this for 3 years, I've done this for 4 years, I don't want to step away from it because this is everything that I have. But mentioning them to them, it's like, okay, what did you take away from this? What do you enjoy? Or at least at the very least, you know what you don't want to do with your life.
I'd even go as far to say something like, the worst experiences that you've ever gone through in your life. I don't even think you have to, like, reframe it and say those weren't the worst experiences, or reframe it as good experiences. Mm-hmm. But also being able to frame that as, like, this experience was so challenging. That experience was terrible. I hated that I went through that experience. Mm-hmm. That experience also made me stronger. That experience also made me, that experience also gave me insight as to how I can keep myself safe. That experience gave me a new drive to do something different, right? I think that those experiences can push us in good directions once we process them, but it's really important that we process them in the first place. So,
yes, exactly. Like, in a bad relationship, it's just like, oh, this was horrible. It made my, it like took a toll on my life. It might've been an abusive relationship. And it's just like, okay, like, that's what it was. But it's like, okay, well, now, you know, like, I'm not going to put up with that. Like, what were the signs? What were the things that I didn't enjoy in this relationship? To understand that it's like, if that ever happens again, then that means I have to walk away, because I'm not willing to kind of just set aside these negative factors just because I like someone. So it's being smarter in your life, but also making you more resilient.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what I love about this. I think we should do a bonus episode about this kind of stuff next week. And like, and like, take the time to, like, really break down these last three episodes, and maybe Chorus process through these last three episodes, and break them down a little bit more in depth in this way that we like to do.
Yeah, so I'm down.
Sorry, everybody, for these alarms that keep going off. My Amazon Alexa speaker, for some reason, every time Sharice's mom gets a package in the mail, rings for us, and I don't know why, and I can't figure that out. I'll figure it out, but yeah. I'm in a new desk setup, and I have, like, an Alexa speaker right here. And the only downside to that is that during my podcast recordings, it'll just go off randomly because my mom got a package. So, anyways, I appreciate you weathering through that. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we will catch you all next time. Bye.